Okay, so Vedanta Sara, and we are on where is it? Yeah, verse 153. Let's do our prayer verses. Akandam Sachidanandam Avang Manasagocharam Atmanam Akiladharam Ashriye Bhishti Siddhriye Arthato Pidvayanandanati Pidvaita Panataha Guru Naraja Vedanta Saram Bhakshe Yathamati. 153, we're looking at the Lakshya Lakshana now. Lakshya, so repeat after me. Lakshya Lakshana.
Lakshya Lakshana.
Sambandhastu.
Sambandhastu.
Yatha.
Yatha.
Tatraiva.
Tatraiva.
Sashabdayam.
Sashabdayam.
Shabdayos.
Shabdayos.
Tadartayorva.
Tadartayorva.
Viruddha Tatkala. Oh, I'm sorry. Viruddha tet kalai tet.
Viruddha tet kalai tet.
Kala vishishtatva.
Kala vishishtatva.
Parityagena aviruddha. Well, I'll break this into here. Parityagena.
Parityagena.
Aviruddha.
Aviruddha.
Devadattena.
Devadattena.
Saha.
Saha.
Lakshya.
Lakshya.
Lakshana.
Bhavaha.
Tatatrapi.
Tatatrapi.
Vakye.
Vakye.
Tattvam.
Tattvam.
Tattvam padayos.
Tattvam padayos.
Tadartayorva.
Tadartayorva.
Viruddha.
Viruddha.
Parokshatva. Parokshatvadi.
Parokshatva. Parokshatvadi.
Vishishtatva.
Vishishtatva.
Paritva.
Paritva.
Parityagena.
Parityagena.
Aviruddha.
Aviruddha.
Chaitanya.
Chaitanyena.
Chaitanyena. Saha.
Saha.
Lakshya Lakshana Bhavaha.
Lakshya Lakshana Bhavaha.
I'm going to read it break in the Sunday. I'll read it slowly. Lakshya Lakshana Sambandha to Yatha Tatra Eva Sa Shabda Ayam Shabdayoho Tad Artayoho Va Viruddha Tat Kala Etat, see that kala, etat, kala, vishishtatva, parityagena, aviruddha, devadattena, saha, lakshya, lakshana, bhavaha. Tata, atra, api, vakye, tat, tvam, padayoho tad artayoho va viruddha parokshatva aparokshatva adi vishishtatva parityagena aviruddha chaitanyena saha lakshya lakshana bhavaha. So we did the Samanadikanya Sambandha, Then we did the Vishesha, Visheshana Sambandha. Now we're doing the Lakshya, Lakshana Sambandha. So, sometimes how we translate here in this context, Lakshya, Lakshana. Lakshana is the thing that implies, the Lakshya is the thing that is implied. So this is the one way that it's translated. We'll see the meaning in a minute. So, Lakshya, Lakshana Sambandha. This connection between two words, the Lakshya, Lakshana Sambandha, to whereas, okay? The two means is when sometimes when you use two can translate as whereas or but, or often it's not translated because what it is doing is just distinguishing it from something else. So we have three different things, the Salmana Dikaranyam, the Vishesha Visheshana, and the Lakshya Lakshana. So the two is now saying, well, different than the other two is the Lakshya Lakshana. Okay? So you could say whereas the Lakshya Lakshana Sambandha, but so the two is being used to differentiate. So you could just say now for the Lakshya Lakshana Sambandha, this connection, this type of a connection. Tatra eva. Tatra means there, and it's referring to there alone. We're referring back to the Soyam Devadatta. Okay? So they're in that sentence. So in that. Tatra, that tra has that sense of the data, sense of the locative. So in that very sentence, Soyam Devadatta, that this Devadatta. Okay. The sa shabda, the word sa, saha, right? Sa means he or that. Ayam shabda, the word this. So sa shabda, ayam shabda yoho. Between this is a genitive dual. So between the sa shabda and the ayam shabda, that sa shabda and ayam shabda is a dwandra. And for those who know some Sanskrit, don't worry if you don't. So sa shabda and the ayam shabda is a dwandra in the genitive dual. Tadartha yoho, again genitive dual, va. So between the word sa and the word sha, or between their meaning. Artha is meaning. So tad artha, the meaning of them, right? So you have these words, sa, the word sa, and the word ayam, the word that, and the word this. So we take that between those two, or between their meaning, right? So the word that is referring to that Devadatta, it's referring to something. That's the meaning of the word. The ayam is referring to something, right? So the thing that's being referred to by the word, that's the artha. Everybody see that? Tad artha yoho. Viruddha means that which is opposed. It's a past passive participle. It's at the end of a long compound. So viruddha tat kala. Kala means time. So the tat kala, the time indicated by that. So the viruddha tatkala, that time. Like if I said that Devadatta is this Devadatta. That is in terms of time, right? That Devadatta that you knew in third grade, that Devadatta that was there way back then, is this Devadatta that is here now. So in this sentence, soyam Devadatta, that this Devadatta, the tat and the that and the this are in terms of time. So the tat kala is past time, that, right? Mm-hmm. Ayam kala is present time. So it says, and viruddha means opposed. So tat kala, etat kala, etat is this, same as ayam. So tat kala, that time, etat kala, this time. Vishishtatva, being qualified by that time and by this time, parityagena, we're going to read this sentence backwards, so don't worry. So here's the end of the compound, parityagena. It means by abandoning completely. Parityagena. By completely abandoning the vishishtatva, the being qualified by that time and this time, which are opposed to each other. Everybody see this? Mm-hmm. So now remember the language. So viruddha means opposed, right? So viruddha, tatkala, that time, etatkala, this time. Vishishtatva, the state of being qualified. Vishishta. Paritya-gena, so by from, pari means from all the way around. Paritya-ga. So by completely abandoning that being, that the being qualified by that time and this time, those two which are both opposed to each other, viruddha. So viruddha tatkala, etatkala, vishishtatva, paritya-gena.
That entire thing is one compound?
Yes.
Because the only ending is ena.
That's right, exactly. So that's one long compound. Then, aviruddha, aviruddha devadattena, saha. Saha means along with or together with, and saha will govern the instrumental, okay? Together with devadatta, who is not opposed, right? That, because it's that devadatta and this devadatta, that is opposed to this. What is back then can't be here. But there's something that remains stable, and that's the devadatta. Okay? So that devadatta, if I say that devadatta is this devadatta, I have to give up. I have to abandon the that and the this, leaving only devadatta. So the devadatta that was qualified by this, by that, is the same devadatta that is qualified by this. Okay? So, as we'll see in a minute, this is a certain type of lakshana. There's three types of lakshana we have to see. This is one type of lakshana, and this is the type of laksha-lakshana-sambandha. There's three types of lakshana, laksha-lakshana-sambandha. Implied, the implier implied. There are three different types. This example is of the type which we use in the Mahavakya. So I'm going to go, after we do this, I'm going to go over all three types and then we'll continue on. So this laksha-lakshana-bhava, this state of implier-implied, is made up of this. By abandoning, giving up the etatkala and the tatkala and the etatkala, which are opposed to each other, right? For both the sub-shabda, talking about the sub-shabda and the ayam-shabda, or their meaning, by giving up these two times, right? And then together with, which are together with the devadatta, each one is with devadatta, ayam-shabda and tat-shabda, that condition becomes what we call the laksha-lakshana-bhava. Part of it has to be given up. We'll see what that means. You keep the devadatta, you give up the tat and the, you give up the that and the this. So let's go on to the next one. It'll help for me, I think, to explain these a little bit more. Tatrapi Bhakye Tatvam Padayoho Tadartayoho Va Viruddha Parokshatva Aparokshatva Adi Vishishtatva Parityagena Aviruddha Chaitanyena Saha Laksha Lakshana Bhavaha. So here it's using the same structure as it did with all the others. So here it says Tata Atra Api. Similarly, Tata Atra Api, here also. So in the first sentence says Tetra Eva there, in the Ayam Devadatta sentence, in that sentence, here also, in the Tetvamasi. So similarly, Atra, here, Api also, Vakye, in this sentence. So similarly here, in this sentence also, that's what it says, similarly in this Vakya also. Tat Tvam Padayoho, between the words tet and tvam, tet, that, tvam, you, pada, word, yoho, genitive dual, between the words tet and tvam, tadartha yoho va, or their meanings, artha meaning, the meaning of them, right? Tayoho, the meaning of them. So genitive dual, va means or, virudha, opposed, parokshatva, that which is paroksha, far away. Like if you say tat, that's paroksha. Like if I say tat tvamasi, you are that, you the jiva are Ishwara. Ishwara is way paroksha. You have no idea. We don't have a vritti of Ishwara, right? It's not a paroksha. So he says, what is opposed to virudha, parokshatva, aparoksha, which is immediate. The tvam is aparoksha, immediate. Paroksha is away. So it says parokshatva, aparokshatva, adi. Remember the adi means sarvagnyatvam, or sarvag. See, because paroksha, aparoksha, tva adi. What does the adi stand for? Sarvagnyatvam for Ishwara, alpagnyatvam for the jiva. Sarvashaktimatvam for Ishwara, alpashaktimatvam for the jiva. Aparokshatvam for Ishwara, aparokshatvam, like that. Okay, limited. Limited in all ways. Limited in knowledge, limited in power, limited in yeshas for the jiva, in fame, in everything. And Ishwara is all complete, total. So, aparokshatva adi, etc. Sarvashaktimatvam, sarvagnyatvam, etc. Vishishtatva, being qualified by. Parityagena, by abandoning, by giving up. So let's read this whole compound backwards. Parityagena, by giving up the vishishtatva, the being qualified by. Parokshatva, aparokshatva, adi. By parokshatvam being away, aparokshatvam being immediately present, by giving up those, along with the adi, the others, virudha, by giving up those two, along with the others that we mentioned, which are opposed to each other, virudha. Paroksha is virudha. It's opposed to aparoksha. So virudha is an important word. Paroksha and aparoksha are virudha. They're opposed to each other. So by giving up these things, parityagena, by completely giving up these that are opposed to each other, the adi would be the sarvagnyatvam and alpagnyatvam, right? The sarvashaktimatvam, alpashaktimatvam. Sarva means all, alpa means small, little. Okay? So by giving up these vishishta, these things, this state of being qualified by these things, then it says, aviruddha chaitanyena, together with the consciousness, which is not opposed. So if we say, tatvamasi, tat chaitanyam, that consciousness is this consciousness. Okay? The tat and the tvam, and the tat and the tvam are virudha. The tat for Ishwara, tvam for the jiva. There's no way that the jiva can be Ishwara. But what can be? What do these two, Ishwara and jiva, have in common? Is the chaitanya. And so not giving up the chaitanya and giving up the tat and the tvam, the Ishwara and the jiva, which have these qualities, paroksha and aparoksha, right? Paroksha and aparoksha, sarvagnyatva, alpagnyatva, etc. Giving up those, which have no relationship to each other. It's not like the qualities of Ishwara. The jiva does not have the qualities of Ishwara, and Ishwara doesn't have the qualities of the jiva. But what do they have in common?
Consciousness.
So, that is Lakshya Lakshana Bhavaha. That is this type of sambandha. Is everybody understanding the Sanskrit? Am I translating enough?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I have a question now. I'm embarrassed to tell you how long it took me to understand that paroksha, aparoksha wasn't in this meaning direct and indirect, because we use it in the other context. So, I mean, I understand now that it's away, you know, away and then more immediate. But are there other are there other nuanced meetings?
Well,
these two words that I should be aware of.
Even those words, direct and immediate for Paroksha, and indirect and away for Paroksha, are both the same in a way.
Yeah.
Let me just explain. Like, when we're looking at the six means of knowledge that we have available to us, we have Pratyaksha, which is sense perception. Sense perception is twofold, right? It's any emotional or mental state is direct, immediate cognition. Anything that's born of sense perception is direct, immediate cognition. Okay, that's Pratyaksha, sense perception. We also have Aparoksha. Aparoksha means it is immediate, but it's not gained through Pratyaksha. The only thing really that can be Aparoksha is the Atma, is the self. Because it's not gained through perception. Any type of vritti is Pratyaksha, in that the vritti is any emotional state that's not generated by sense perception, even a meditative state, is called Sakshi Bhasya. It means it's illumined by the Sakshi. In the end, every vritti you have is illumined by the Sakshi, by the witness. But when we say it's Pratyaksha, it's Sakshi Bhasya, that means an emotional state, meditative state, inner experience of some sort that is not being generated by perception is a type of Pratyaksha. So emotions, meditative states, etc. are a type of Pratyaksha, perception. The other most common meaning of Pratyaksha is sense perception. Anything that's generated by my sense organs gives me direct, immediate knowledge. That's Pratyaksha, sense perception.
But it can also... So it's kind of dual, that it also means sense perception and also mean things that are not sense perception.
Any type of vritti.
Any vritti that's memory, emotion.
No, yeah,
that's interesting.
Yeah, because...
Using the same word for two different...
That's right. Well, because both are types of immediate knowledge that require a vritti. Right? That's why we say Pratyaksha. It requires a vritti. It's something to be known. It's an experience that you have. It's an immediate experience that you have in the vritti. But it's not generated by perception. It's like emotion, for instance, or an imagination, or a meditative state. Right? Those are experiences that are direct and immediate. You see? So we say that these are two types of Pratyaksha. Every other one, except for Shabda, as we'll see, all of the other means of knowledge are Paroksha. Paroksha means they're not Pratyaksha, they're away. By away, what they mean by away is not necessarily in terms of distance at all. It's that you can't have a direct, immediate experience of it. It's para. It's away from your sense organs. Okay? Paroksha means that means of knowledge that you're using is not being gained by Pratyaksha. Prati means that which is around the eyes, around the sense organs. Prati. So, Aksha stands for eyes, but it also means all sense organs. So that which occurs in the vicinity of the sense organs gives you direct, immediate knowledge. That knowledge which occurs beyond sense perception is away from sense perception, as though away. That's Paroksha, okay? So we have these two. The knowledge that is gained through Pratyaksha, inner and outer, and all the other means of knowledge that are Paroksha, not dependent on sense perception. All means of knowledge depend on sense perception, but they require something else. Okay, so I'll tell you about that in a minute. So we've got Pratyaksha and Paroksha, and Aparoksha. Aparoksha means it's not indirect. It's not away from perception. It's not indirect. You know, but it's not perception either. It's self-evident. That's aparoksha. The Atma is not dependent on Pratyaksha. It's self-evident. It's not dependent, it's not paroksha either because it's not away. consciousness is self-shining. It is its own experience. So aparoksha jnanam is knowledge of that which is self-evident, as opposed to knowledge which requires a vritti, where in which there's going to be a subject-object relationship. Subject-object, okay? So now, if we look at, so we've got pratyaksha and aparoksha that give direct immediate knowledge, and then we have everything else. Inference, presumption, you know, even saying there's not an elephant in the room, you're not seeing the elephant to say it's not there, so it requires another, there's another operation that's necessary. Shabda pramana is the sixth one. It's a pramana which involves the use of words. So they say that pramana is that's the one that's most obvious to us in terms of paroksha, because, for instance, all of your textbooks that you study, say you study chemistry or physics, you're taking the word of what we call an optopurusha, an authority. We are standing on the shoulders of people who have done research, and we have shraddha in their research. We believe what they say. They have a reputation. They're called an optopurusha. Okay, that's shabda pramana. The first part of the Vedas are considered shabda pramana, a means of knowledge through shabda, for those who have shraddha in the Vedas. The Vedas as revealed knowledge is the knowledge that comes with the creation. There's no way for you to validate what's going on in all of these lokas. There's no way for you really to validate reincarnation or punya and papa and all of these type of things, transmigration, the devatas, the whole Ishwara Swarupa. The first part of the Vedas is shraddha. It's belief, because you have trust in the authority of the Vedas. Okay, so indirect knowledge. The second part of the Vedas, which we call the Jnanakanda, is the Vedanta, the Upanishads. The Upanishads are not about indirect knowledge. They're about direct, immediate knowledge of something which you cannot see with your sense organs. Direct, immediate knowledge of the self, of the Atma, which is not going to be gained through pratyaksha, sense perception, or through paroksha, because the Atma is not away. Nor is it an object of sense perception, because there's not subject-object relationship. It is the self-shining nature of your being. So, if your knowledge of yourself cannot be gained through pratyaksha or paroksha, or it's not paroksha either, then all of the sense organs that you have available to yourself are not relevant. Okay. The Upanishads are part of the Vedas, revealed means of knowledge, which take you through various prakriyas, teaching methodologies, to hold up a mirror to your being, to bring about that viveka, so that the mind can differentiate the mityatva of itself from the truth of its content. And that content, the Atma, is immediate, is self-shining. Okay? Now, so when we're saying the difference between paroksha and pratyaksha, or aparoksha in this case, here, paroksha means there's no way that we can have a vritti of Ishwara. Ishwara is beyond our sense perception. I could say, you have a little piece of Ishwara right here. There's no experience that you have that is not Ishwara. But I can't have the whole sarvajñatva. I can't see the whole swarupa of Ishwara. Right? So Ishwara, as Bhagavan, with all of the different lokas, the whole infinite manifestation of the creation, that is paroksha for me. It's beyond my sense perception. Right? The Atma, on the other hand, my own self-experience, is paroksha. Here's my body, mind, sense organs through Pratyaksha. It's immediate. The Atma is self-shining. There's no problem. So Ishvara is Paroksha. I can't have a vritti of Ishvara. I have an immediate vritti of myself, right? Mm. So Ishvara is Paroksha, no vritti available to me. And then the I am a Paroksha. So there's a huge difference between what is immediately available to me and what I can't have a vritti of. I am opagnyaha. I have limited knowledge. I can't have the experience of sarvagnyatva, limitless knowledge. It's paroksha, I don't know. It's all shraddha.
Were you saying that with respect to shabda pramana, that there's a portion of it that's paroksha and a portion that's aparoksha?
Yeah, and I'm going to tell you about that right now. So in the shabda pramana, when we get to the Vedanta, when we get to the Vedas, the first half of the Vedas is paroksha, because it's giving knowledge of Ishvara. So it's all going to be paroksha. Even all of the different levels that we transmigrate, that there's such a thing as reincarnation, that there's punya and papa, that there are rituals that will give results, and that's all acausal connections. We have no idea how that happens. So you have a certain shraddha in that. It's all paroksha jnanam. In the world, when we're talking about shabda, also, it's usually paroksha jnanam, like a textbook, or you ask somebody for directions, or all of these type of things, you know. That's paroksha. You have no idea. But there is another way that shabda pramana works, and we see this in the Vedanta, and we also see it in these examples that are being used, like soyam devadatta. That devadatta, which you knew in third grade, is this devadatta. And so you need it, because you could be having a relationship with this devadatta, talking to him and all of that, have no recognition that this guy is that guy. Okay, so it's the shabda pramana that brings those two together. So shabda pramana can give you direct, immediate knowledge. One example Swamiji uses, in his own experiences, he was taking a trip up to Rishikesh on a train. This is when he was young, a young sannyasi. And he had a reputation at that time, still quite well known around the world, around India. So he's taking a train up to Rishikesh, to his ashram, and there was somebody sitting next to him. Okay. And you know, in India, everybody talks all the time. They're all ask about how you are and where do you come from and all of that. So, and tell about whatever they're doing. And so this man was saying, I'm so excited, I'm going up to Rishikesh, and I'm going to a camp with Swami Dayananda. And so Swamiji goes, oh, really? Where did you hear about Swami Dayananda? So he plays him a little bit, you know, like that, and then finally says, I am that Swami Dayananda. And then, you know, this paroksha Swami Dayananda becomes, you know, immediately known through shabda. Because how would he know? Mm-hmm. He's experiencing him through pratyaksha, through sense perception. He has a direct, immediate experience of him. But you need the shabda to bring the two together. The tenth man story is another experience of shabda pramana being given direct knowledge, because all the while the tenth man is there, and he's searching for the tenth man. So he needs the sadhu to come and count out the other nine boys and say, you are that tenth man. And then all of the dukkha, all of the sorrow goes away that was caused by the ignorance of himself being the tenth man, right? So that means that shabda is capable of giving both immediate knowledge and giving paroksha jnana, both. So in the Vedanta, the fact that shabda pramana can give a paroksha jnana, it can give immediate knowledge, is paramount to how words can act as a pramana, as a means of knowledge. Right, so when we use an example like soyam devadatta, that devadatta is this devadatta, we're looking at it in three different ways: the Samanya, Adhikaranyam, the Vishesha Visheshana, and now the Lakshya Lakshana, which is the paramount one, the most important, as we'll see as we get into it. In the Lakshya Lakshana, what has to happen is the things that are viruddha, that are opposed to each other, need to be dropped off, keeping what is the constant in both cases. So whether I say tat tvam asi, the tat and the tvam are opposed to each other. The jiva is limited. It's aparoksha. Ishwara is paroksha. There's no way you can have a vritti of Ishwara. There's no way you can really even know what sarvagnitva. That's paroksha. You don't know what that is. Sarvashaktimatva, having all power. You don't know what that is. It's beyond our scope of knowledge. You're very clear about your own alpagnitvam, your own limited knowledge, your own alpashaktimatvam, your own limited capacity. That's very clear. So what is going to bring, what is going to bring these two together if the Vedanta gives you the Mahavakya? The whole Vedanta is the Mahavakya. The Mahavakya talks about the identity between you and Ishwara. So tat tvamasi, you are that, right? Even if I say, from the absolute standpoint, aham brahmasmi, this me is Brahman, is limitless. There's nothing about me that is limitless, you know. So I need a means of knowledge to bring the paroksha and the aparoksha together. And that methodology is called Lakshya Lakshana. You have to go to the implied meaning of the word.
When you say Shabda Pramana can give both paroksha and aparoksha jnana, does Shabda Pramana refer specifically to the spoken word or the read word, or even for a Uttamadhikari, something that, you know, like Raman, you know, that just thought, just thinking about it?
That's a good question. When we're talking about it in terms of Vedanta, we're primarily talking about the spoken word. The reason for that, it could by some with difficulty be gained from the written word, but it would have to take a lot of writing. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is that all of the concepts of our words that we use are all born of within duality. Mm-hmm. So every word that you use really is the, which we call the vachika. It's the immediate meaning of the word. It all exists within duality. And so if we have a Mahavakya like Tat Tvamasi, or you are Ishwara, there has to be so much done to get to the Atma from the standpoint of the Tvam Pada, the word Tvam, and to get to Brahman from the standpoint of Ishwara. So there's a lot of teaching involved there. So in terms of Vedanta, just saying a Mahavakya or reading these books, unless for by some grace, all of that knowledge is something that is working properly for you and taking you from the vachika, mm-hmm. the immediate meaning, to the laksharta. See what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so when we're teaching, there's no, you can't sit there and say, you are Brahman, go in peace, you know. Even in the Vakya Vritti, one famous, very well-known text that we've done, the teacher starts teaching and the student stops him and says, you know, I can't understand a word you're saying. Without knowing really what tvam means and really what tat means, you have to thoroughly explain these words to me before I can understand this asi you are, you know? And the teacher pats him on the back for the correct. And then there's a whole unfoldment that has to take place. So, you know, that's why we rely on the spoken word. But that's not to say that, say, somebody's born into this this world, they already had knowledge with a lot of pratibandhikas or whatever, and they take another birth and they're just right for it. Who knows? But we rely on spoken word.
Could you clarify something about Shabda Pramana, Aparoksha, Shabda Pramana?
Well, it's not a... Okay, go ahead.
Well, Shabda Pramana is a means of direct knowledge.
Yes,
of the nature of the self, for example.
Or... We also have examples in Vyavahara, in the world also, like Soyam Devadatta, you know, or the story's 10th man.
You see, one thing I'm not clear on is, it seems like there's a difference between, like in the world you say, there seems to be this something I'm not clear about, because the typical situation of like words helping to give knowledge would be something like, you know, using words to point to something, but then you still need to apply either the sense perception or the buddhi.
Always. But all of these, all of the paroksha is going to at some point involve sense perception, but not sense perception alone. Mm-hmm. It's sense perception plus something.
For paroksha or for aparoksha?
Yeah, no. For paroksha. Say, pateksha is just sense perception.
Right.
It gives a vritti, which is known.
But what I'm asking is, how is shabda pramana that is aparoksha, how does that work differently than just words being used to direct one's attention to something and then you see it?
Only in this way, that in the world, you need to, you're using your sense perception, right, to give you the vrittis that you're working with.
Mm-hmm.
Right, like say in Soyam Devadatta. This Devadatta is here. I have pateksha. I have the immediate experience of him through pateksha, right, through sense perception.
Right.
But I don't know that, I haven't recognized that this Devadatta is that Devadatta, but I know Devadatta through sense perception.
Mm-hmm.
Here, the Atma is not known through sense perception.
Mm-hmm.
Experientially, okay, in Soyam Devadatta, experientially, Devadatta is known through sense perception.
Yeah.
In terms of Tattvamasi, experientially, the Atma is aparoksha.
Mm-hmm.
It is known as one's immediate, non-objectifiable experience. So that you can say, I am a conscious being.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's aparoksha. This is, Devadatta is pratyaksha, immediate knowledge. Atma is aparoksha, immediate knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
We say aparoksha because it's not immediate knowledge through sense perception, but it's not indirect knowledge.
Okay.
So the negates the paroksha.
Mm-hmm.
So not indirect, immediate, not indirect. Immediate. Direct through sense perception, right, for Devadatta. So now, in the Shabda Pramana, when we want to gain immediate knowledge through Shabda Pramana, you have to have the experience there. So here Devadatta is with his sense through sense perception, but I don't know that he's the one, right?
Okay.
Or here the 10th man is, immediately known as me, through sense perception. I am this body, mind, sense organs.
Mm-hmm.
But I am this person here. In a sense, it's aparoksha, the being is immediately experienced, but there's the ajnanam that causes me to take myself as this body, mind, sense organs, but I'm immediately here, right? So it's through shabda that I recognize that I am the 10th man, the 10th man story.
So it's like there's always an experiential basis, and then it's the shabda that gives the sort of cognition, so to speak.
Of the relationship, or what needs to be recognized.
What
its nature is, really.
Okay.
Well, the words almost act as a perception or a sense organ.
Well, in a sense, in that they remove the parokshatvam. They remove it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And make you recognize it for what it is. And so that's how the Mahavakya works. It removes... We have three very important types of lakshanas. We'll do it next week, but we have to really go through step by step to really see how the Mahavakya works. But understanding that shabda can give direct, immediate knowledge, like these examples, Soyam Devadatta, you know, or the 10th man story, or Swamiji's funny story, I am that Swami that you're looking at, you're going to go visit.
So that is really a good example even for self-knowledge, the Sayam Devadatta.
Totally.
It's very close. Yeah.
And tenth man is great because the tenth man is suffering so much. Mm-hmm. And when he realizes I am the tenth man, you know, he's immediately freed of that suffering, which is important there because you realize that the removal of ignorance is real. It has effects. That's why, you know, even when you say this is a rope, not a snake, when you were experiencing the snake, you were having emotions and samsara based upon the snake. When you see the rope, that whole samsara is gone. So the ignorance has an effect, and the removal of the ignorance has a profound effect also.
But it's not the immediate removal, isn't it? Remember, sometimes we talk about the tenth man that actually bangs his head against the tree.
Yeah, but we use that. You know what why we use that? That's what we call Pratibandhika Jnanam.
For all us headbangers?
Yeah. It's like when Swamiji will tell big stories about that. Like the tenth man was so traumatized because he was responsible for all those boys and now he's going to have to face the parents and all of this and what's going to become of me and on and on and on. The old man comes and says, no problem, you're the tenth man, counts the other nine. He sees it clearly, but he was so emotionally traumatized that when he walks away, all of the emotions come up again and he has to do some nididhyasana.
Right.
No, it's okay. I am the tenth man. I understand.
Well, the Mandukya just said that to us.
But I found that interesting that there is this, I think at one point you also talked almost like the wound has to heal, you know, from the banging. But I found that interesting, even you have that knowledge in that moment, there is still like the overwhelming.
There can be still overwhelming. It takes a while for the unconscious and habitual patterns and ways of relating to the world sometimes come up and overwhelm you. When the overwhelm goes away, you're still left there with your knowledge, but it's kind of like, you know, being swept away by a tidal wave. So you're sitting at the wave comes and it totally overwhelms you, and then it pulls back and everything's fine.
Mm-hmm.
So that happens for a while.
Mm-hmm.
But then you just have to bring the mind back. And even if you don't bring the mind back, it will come back. It'll settle down and then you'll be fine. But there comes a time when even when the waves are big, it doesn't make any difference. It no longer has the capacity to cover you. Because even when the huge tidal wave comes, you're fine. You're not covered at all. It's just that the mind is so used to getting lost in the experience, in the emotional experience, that adhyasa, you know, that superimposition, as though there's just no focus on anything except the emotional experience because it's so intense.
That's interesting, too. It really highlights that this knowledge will really only work on a mumukshu who has somebody who has a hunch.
Has seen, recognized something. Otherwise, there's no...
A little bit.
There has to be something.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's why they go through this viveka, vairagya, mumukshutvam. And then shama, demu, parati, all of these qualities of the mind that really come up to a little different level if the viveka and vairagya are there. Viveka means, you know, I see that there's nothing nitya in the world. Everything is subject to change and loss, actually. Everything's subject to loss, period. Every mental state, everything. Everything about me, body, mind, sense organs, is subject to loss. And so how can I seek any lasting happiness from things that are by nature subject to loss? It's not like I'm anything wrong with me. It's impossible. So when you see that, then you gain a vairagya. It's not that these things aren't nice and all of that, but they can't free me. They can't solve my problem of being able to just relax and just to be free, you know? To let the universe be, and let the universe be what it is, and I'm still whole and complete. If to the degree that I'm dependent on anything in the universe, I can't just be whole and complete because I need this and I need that. And so I'm always, that jivatvam is always rising its head. We have experiences, even though you don't really know it or think of it like this, those times when, say, you're walking in nature or whatever the reason, there's nothing in you that at that moment wants anything to be different. There's no obstruction. You're just that ananda, that wholeness is there, that beauty is there, because there's no tension in the mind. But those are experiences we look for. You know, those experiences are, we're looking for shaktivrittis. We don't know, we don't recognize the nature of your being, which is always there, whole and complete, no matter what the vritti is. When you recognize your own being as the very source for wholeness, completeness, ananda, then you can really enjoy Ishvara. But when you need Ishvara to be a certain way, then it's really hard because Ishvara is not, you're not the center of attention. You're the center of your experience, but your likes and dislikes are what we call jiva srishti. They're your own projection. They're not necessarily Ishvara's plan at all, you know. When they're in harmony with your prarabdha, then they're Ishvara. But what about when they're your own projection upon Ishvara, based upon likes and dislikes that you've accumulated, that type of thing? Yes, we should stop. Is there a prayer? That's a samsara. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.